good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
I think everybody knows that actually Friday, I believe, was the anniversary of the accidental death of the founder of this temple and our root teacher, Kogen Chidon Tagawa Roshi. So what I thought we'd do today is to try to commemorate that. Actually, Judy Cosgrove kindly suggested in an email that we read from Kogan's autobiography. And so I brought along this 12-page autobiography from Kogan, but some of it I've selected. So I'm thinking that we'd read the selections because it probably would take too long to read all of it with discussions. So the large print things will be what we read unless somebody has some desire to fill in the small print readings. And of Kogan, many of us feel that he essentially was our savior, our salvation, or this practice that he brought to America and put in our laps almost and faithfully supported for 1968 to 2002, 44 years, including founding this particular place. It's incredibly important to us. And I thought I'd read just a few things that encapsulate some aspects of his life very, very roughly, and then ask Michael to read something that he said, one of the last things that he said in a formal gathering to his senior students, which I thought was very important. I think many of you may have heard him also. And then open it for discussions and just passing the biography around from hand to hand and asking each person to read, and we can talk freely, I think, about it and about Kogan, about our heritage. So Kogan was the youngest in a traditional family, I think, of six children in a temple in Japan, so he sort of was born into this and raised in it. There was a time of the Second World War, actually, beginning just about his birth in 1938 and ending in 1945. And he was born into a very traditional, I don't know, you know, the change is just incomprehensible to most of us, but he was born into a very refined cultural country. And they knew themselves as having been derived from, what, infinity, having gone continuously for more than 2,000 years and having great refinement, and everybody else was barbarians outside the country. The country was largely closed except for the last 100 years. But from that mindset, they were conquered in 1945 by barbarians, us. And we essentially brought, I think everyone in Japan understood within a few years that what was being brought to them, we didn't really destroy their institutions, was relatively kind and appropriate and right. So they see the complete foundation of their rigid cultural framework of, I'm talking too much. Anyway, he was ordained at 12, so he was continuously his training, started sitting at 3, I think, his first training. 25 years of study actually leading to him finally his master's, I think, or he was into his master's or close to it, and did a lot of sashin training also along the way, and then he decided it was too much. He went to the monastery, just didn't want any more intellectual head stuff. He said after that, well, he went into the monastery and basically stayed there, but Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, invited him to Japan through a long...
You mean America?
To America.
To America.
Yeah.
Sorry. Thank you. So he went from essentially to Ahegi, where he had had some profound experiences, to Tassajara Zen Center pretty quickly, and stayed for 2 years in Tassajara, so maybe 5 years total of monastic training before he came back to found or be the teacher for the Zendo in Los Altos that eventually became Jikoji. He had given the precepts to over 100 people, and he founded maybe half a dozen different temples in Europe and in America, including Jikoji. My one reflection on him was just contrasting his life with that of Ryokan, which is, we've talked about in a number of talks before. Ryokan was a very solitary, lonely master, never founded anything, never ordained anybody, but there's a certain feeling of similarity between the two. So with that overall background, I'll ask Michael to read something from Carolyn Atkinson's book. When he was asking this gathering to why we sit, why we practice Zazen.
We sit to make life meaningful. The significance of our life is not experienced in striving to create some perfect thing. We must simply start with accepting ourselves. Sitting brings us back to actually who and where we are. This can be very painful. Self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we are living in ignorance, a darkest night. We may still be awake, but we don't know where we are. We cannot see. The mind has no light. Practice is this candle in our very darkest room.
As far as I'm concerned, we're open to discussion at this point. I thought maybe afterwards, if we had time before lunch, we could go down to Kopen Shrine and offer incense. Please feel free to discuss. You can read or you can pass it to Peter. That's true for everybody. If you don't feel like reading, you can pass it on. It's just a large print generally.
So these are the words of Coleman?
And his autobiography.
When I think, why am I here, it's really unthinkable to find a reason why. It feels like being pushed by some force to keep up my presence, no matter where it is. Pushed from the past, that's one feeling. Another is also a powerful longing, which comes up from inside of me, with a wish to create something which I would be able to do. For this reason, my second elder brother definitely named me Dreamer. My youngest brother is a big dreamer, he says. Maybe so. He is sort of a realistic realist, like the second son of the Karamazov brothers. He is incredibly intellectual and cynical and humorous.
That's true. I know his brother too.
He can chop up everything he wants to, and yet everyone calls him a holy man or a saint. His nickname has been Stainless or Saint. Saint Caven is his nickname from junior high school. He keeps up all relationships. From the time he was a very small child, he has kept proper communication. When someone writes a letter, within one day he writes back, which is a miracle to me. Coven, by the way, was very famous for never answering letters. I never write back, he says. And every time he lectures me, see, you are the dreamer. I am the saint, he says. I am unable to define myself, what I actually am. A lot of new things happen every day. It amazes me how many new things come in new days. On the other hand, how strange it is. Old things always follow right to the new days, all of them. Do you know the context of this quote?
If you click on copensarma.org, or go to that and click on autobiography. Huh. Unless I made a mistake, that's literally what's...
That sounds like correct, yeah.
Now we know why you don't answer emails and phone calls.
I don't like teaching.
I have to think very differently about it.
You could say your name, too, if you...
I'm Peter. Maybe I'm Peter. I wasn't taught what shikantaza is. I haven't had formal koan training. From childhood, whatever I was interested in, I could study. So I started with biology and all kinds of necessary things, as usual with children in Japan. Calligraphy, Japanese language, to speak, write, think, which relates with the very symbolic form of nature and things. By seeing each character, you can reproduce each thing in nature. I was very involved in learning language in elementary school.
I'm Joe. One day, a very vigorous man asked me, among many people, making me very embarrassed, I heard you are a Zen master. Have you experienced great enlightenment? I was so embarrassed. I had to say no. I haven't experienced such crunchy stuff.
Crunchy.
I'm Marie. I was 13 years old. I said, I will keep, sustain, no killing life, through Sesho Kai. I didn't know what I was saying, but my ordination master was sitting way up like a seat, about the same height as Buddha's seat. I was sitting there surrounded by shaved monks and nuns, trying not to run away. They were sitting there in Zazen, so I grabbed their energy, and in my high-pitched voice I said, I will. 13. 14 years later, I appreciated that had happened. I didn't appreciate it at the time. Feeling was all right, although the next day the village boys came as usual. Shall we go? Yes, let's go. And we were off on bicycles with fishing tackle and lunchbox. At 2 or 3 o'clock, we started for the irrigation ditch in a rice field. Some ditches were like very big, like a little river. You get in the reeds and fish and come back with tons of fish. The day before, I had been saying, I will not kill life. Among various studies I have experienced in my life, I feel very appreciative to have received the precepts. The older I become, the more I appreciate them. I was very lucky, being born as a child of a Zen priest, and growing up in the atmosphere of temple life. Again, deep appreciation. At the same time, I feel that if I were born in a different family, where would I be?
I'm John. I was interested in carving out the historical Buddha's life. I wanted to know what kind of life he lived. So my study was focused toward historical material, so I ended up in Kyoto University, where the best library is. In its many stories and in the basement, I was like a bookworm crawling there. I'm still not clear what kind of person Gautama Buddha was. To think about him makes me feel I immediately go back home where I started. I was very proud of what I studied, too proud, I think. My own mind drove me to find out what was Buddha's enlightenment. Most of my early years were spent only on this point. This drove me to various places, years and years of practice with doubt, with thirst for knowledge. Forgetting reality, my face turned around, and I went way into the past. So you can imagine how far I lost myself. Head was first, so that my head went into the books and traveled in books, all kinds of Buddhist literature. I feel now it was a nightmare. At that time, I was so excited. My body was like this, hunched head first. I didn't understand anything. I became a very big, smart asshole. And I reached the point of the theory of the very close process of the enlightened state of practice, how that knowledge turns to shiny wisdom. It was very, very hard. It was certainly, I was completely head-oriented.
It goes on. My two teachers, Soko Eto, the professor, and Kodo Sawaki Roshi, were enshrined in Kosho Uchiyama Roshi's temple on Taji. I brought incense and flowers every month for 4 years, and whenever Kosho Uchiyama Roshi saw my face in his temple, he would say, "Oh, hi, Kobo-san. Ocha dozo. How about a cup of tea?" And he would say, "Quit school and come here and sit with us." Every time. And for some reason, I didn't quite feel comfortable about joining. I was Kodo Sawaki's very young student from high school time. So it was very, very hard. And I stayed as a bookie type. And every month went back.
I'm Greg. And then Gaijin Nagao, my professor, at the end of my master's thesis said, "Don't you want to stay here and continue to study?" I was very much suffering at that time in various ways, completely confused. And I had reached a point of understanding that after endless practice, the vows are accomplished in concrete form as a bodhisattva for many lifetimes. Still, endlessly, bodhisattva's practice continues. In my sight at that time, everybody's face looked like bodhisattva except my own. So I begged Professor Nagao, "Please let me go to the monastery. I need to sit again."
I'm Russell. I recall my first impression of Aheiji. I wasn't entering Aheiji as a monk then. Before that, I went to visit the temple. The monks' practice quarters were hidden from the pilgrims, from tourists and sightseers, and yet, in the evening, in the golden light of sunset, about 70 monks carrying oryoki were traveling from the monks' hall to the kitchen through the long corridor passing through the Buddha hall. All carried oryoki with both hands, like this, and their heads were shaved, and they wore the same kind of robes. Every one of them was kind of transparent, their skin whitish and their eyes not moving, looking at the floor as they went, like looking at gongko, wild geese flying together. Oh my goodness, I have never seen such a thing in my life. I've got to come here. And I went back to Kyoto to continue to study. This Gunko monk's work was very impressive to me. What's in their mind? I knew what it was, but what's in their mind? I thought there must be some big thing going on with them. And then I went to my Dharma master, who had watched me from birth to adulthood, and told him, I'm going to stop school and go to a monastery. Please let me go to head monastery where the spirit of Dogen Zenji must still be alive. I want to experience actual practice day and night. If I continue to study in academic field of Buddhist literature, my brain might burst into pieces. Too much already. Please let me go to the monastery.
My name is Min.
Tangario?
That's right. In Tangario, you sit all day from early morning, 3:30 to 9:15 in the evening. You cannot go into the main sitting part, but stay in the entrance room and pay attention to what you are getting into. You listen. You cannot walk around freely, but just sit there and listen where it is. Temple is big, very big, with many buildings. Instead of 3 days, I ended up staying 2.5 years there, until right before I came to the United States. Tangario is like an entrance exam which tests whether you are able to stay and live in the monastery or not. Most students take about 10 days to 2 weeks in this big examination period. Ego is so big, so you have a very big problem. Not that ego is big, but people are forced to be independent and individual, not relying on other people or the support of the system. You get up on your own feet and are responsible for whatever you do. I was trained in Japanese society, just as all of you here, as very self-responsible, so I didn't realize until later how big my ego was and how deeply rooted in body and mind. Elder monks visit in this room where you are sitting. They come, walking swiftly, soundlessly, with a big stick hiding in their sleeve. Their heads were all blue. Our heads were white. Tofu head, we called it. New shaved, so you can tell which is new and which is old. They came swiftly, soundlessly, and stood behind you, and you start to shake. I was trained to argue properly at school, so I could argue with those trained monks logically, but monastery is certainly a logical place. When you respond, the answer is a huge acoustic whack whack, and each time your eyes pop out and stars go like that. Sweat and cold all at once.
My name is Todd.
Yes.
Those Koryosaku?
Kiyosaki?
Kiyosaka.
Korsaku.
Kiyosaka.
Today, I appreciate what it did to me. It's like hammering the ego, crushing the ego. I was too proud. Their question was, why are you here? Zen talk, we called it. Where did you come from? Why are you here? You could be anywhere else. Why are you here? There are many other good teachers in Japan. Why did you choose this? Finally, a little monk screams, this is Dogen Zenji's temple. I want to stay here. You beg for training. Hearing that, they finally say, you can stay. By that time, my ego is melted and is splashed everywhere on the walls. That was my first experience of brainwashing. False pride was with me when I went to first Dokusan, sitting like this, and my whole body was trembling. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to, how to talk. So I prostrated several times and sat in front of him. It was rare to sit face to face with somebody, so I directly faced him and looked into his eyes, and all of a sudden something broke within me and tears came like waterfall, and I couldn't stop. Immediately, Goto Roshi started to chant in a very low voice from the 600 volumes of Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra. He started from the very beginning chanting in front of me and kept going and going and going. I knew the beginning of it, but I didn't remember so much of it. He was chanting while I was crying, and finally he said, "It's okay, go back to Sashin, go back and sit." He didn't ask why I cried.
I'm Doug. Second year of monastery, my master in Kamo, Niigata Prefecture, telegraphed me, and I rushed back to spend one month with him at his temple. I was his only disciple at that time, and he showed me very strange things. "Draw these, copy these in your handwriting," he said. "Three materials on 7-foot-long pieces of silk, 2 feet wide, and you copy his material onto new silk. It shows where you stand in inner practice. Confirmation of the essence of your practice in action determines whether your own name is on this chart or not. Laymen can receive this also. If a layman has the potential for teaching people, by his teacher's confirmation, permission, he starts to teach. Even if you have permission, if you do not want to teach in an ordinary way, you don't need to do so." After 1 month, he said, "Now you go back to the monastery or whatever you want." So he kicked me out from his influence, and I ended up living in this country. Still, every day I think of him and about what his intention to do and what was his intention to do this particular ceremony with me.
Middle of winter, Sabak Aheji, Sashin leather was piled up on the cushion. After morning service, you go back to the Zendo, the monk's hall, and on your black cushion, piles of letter from the week. One of them was one of those red and blue international airmail letters. "Who wrote this airmail to me? I know nobody in another country." There was a letter from Suzuki Roshi invited me to the United States to help with his new project. Tassajara began a half year after I received this letter. He needed somebody who knew Eheji, so I was picked. Abbot Taizen Kumazawa Zenji was 96 years old, and Vice Abbot was my favorite master. He was my master's teacher. So this vice abbot is actually the one who said okay to Suzuki Roshi. This abbot, Taishin Sato Zenji, was old and blind, but when whoever came to his room, even before they opened the shoji door, he knew who was coming and called the name. "Koben-san, dasuka, dasuka?" "Yes, sir, hi." Cold sweat everywhere I go. He could walk without an attendant everywhere in Eheji, which has thousands of steps. Sometimes a close attendant would trip, and he would laugh at him. "Very inconvenient to have open eyes," he said. "Did I tell you my sort of, I thought it was a Kensho experience at Eheji?" "Oh, it was February. I sat so many sessions there, which? It was snow. New snow came to the mountains, first snow, Rohatsu, second year at Eheji. The first snow came at about 8 o'clock in the morning. The sun hit the mountain and the snow started to melt very fast. You can see from the monk's hall, which is a similar feeling to this room, probably the Zendo down there that he was talking about. It is maybe half the size of this one, and two huge hibachi were sitting there. And I came down to go to the bathroom and stopped in the shuryo, the monk's hall. Before I went back to join the sitting again, I sat there, and through the window, about the same size as these windows, I could see snow, white snow, on the deep, green, huge, hundreds of years old cedar trees. Many, many of them. And from drips of melting, there were hundreds of millions of lights reflecting. And it was an incredible view. It was finished in 5 minutes or so. I was sitting there, and I forgot to go back to sit. It lasted about 3 months. I was kind of a strange person to people. And you may feel that was Kensho, but it is way before Kensho. Many things, small things like that, happen one after another. And each time I thought, maybe this is it. Oh no, this couldn't be it.
In the second year in America, after Tassajara was about ready, to me it was going smoothly after 2 years. Regulation was pretty good. Everyone was serious, so I said, the promised time has come. I have to go back to meet with my master. They are waiting for my return. Suzuki Roshi said, you can go, but you are the kind of person who should live in this country. He gently said that and didn't explain why. Trudy Dixon, who suffered with breast cancer, was about to pass away, but was still coming to Tassajara to practice. A wonderful lady she was. One night I visited her room. She was lying down. Her body had blue light, an aura. Her whole body was covered with it. She said, I have to go, but I very much appreciate that you are here to help us. Those are the words that encourage me to return.
So I went back to be an attendant to my master, and while I was there, there was a big storm, and my town was covered by a flood. Big water rushed out from the mountains and many houses were washed away. I ended up staying half a year in Japan to help clean up. There was my father's temple by the Kamo River bank and my master's temple, which has a similar feeling to this place. There is a steep slope of hill coming down behind the temple. Rain washed away all the ditches and a big chunk of bamboo forest slid down. I had to work very hard to put them back together. Half a year later, I went to my master and we sat face to face, quietly. He made green tea and I drank. He said, are you going? And I said, yes, yes, I am going again. I won't forget his face at that time. He said, suitable ability should be at the suitable place. That's all he said to me. My master was still in good shape, but getting old. His wife is getting a little softer. She was like my master's master, pushy and energetic and very sharp-tongued. You will be dead if she starts to criticize you. She said, this temple doesn't need two masters. You go somewhere. I said, thank you.
When I go back to Japan for a week, I feel very shocked every day, and then slowly start to become Japanese. And before I feel I have become Japanese again, I have to pull myself out. Otherwise, I would have to who say goodbye to you. It's a very, very strong pull. I've spent some long period in retreat, and after some experience of being alone, becoming kind of familiar with myself, it took a long time to come back to people and start to recover old relationships. Still working on it. I had a powerful admiration for people of knowledge. When I went to school to study, some people appeared like the ocean or sky. It wasn't artistic devotion in wish to serve that person, but an amazing longing to know things from the person whose experience after many, many years had developed almost unreachable polished knowledge. That drew me. But I don't encourage students to devote themselves to me. I don't want to have any students too busy. I'm a student still. After I become 90 years old, then you can start to hold my hand when I walk.
Most of the time, my sitting is utterly dark and very warm, and it feels like a fermented junkyard or something. But once in a while, a forgotten jewel is in there, so I treasure them. When I pull it out, it shines. Often I feel that the action of Zazen itself saves me from so much heaviness of life. It brings me back to where I started. After about 5 or 6 sittings, my body feels very energized. To sit with you is a very wonderful excuse, actually. If I sit alone, Zazen flips me away, throws me away, you're no good. Breaking many precepts one after another, I gave up Zazen, and it was very foolish to do that. I mean, I thought I'm not worthy to do Zazen. For this reason, I thank you very much. If you pulled me out of the dark and let me sit with you. It is wonderful to sit 7 days, even though I know what will happen and what's going on. Still, it's nice to have some slight new discovery, always.
Yeah, I know when I'm just deciding whether I want to read the small print or not. I think I will. One purpose of my life is, this is small print, no military on this earth, no fighting, no creating weapons is my aim. Such gigantic energy, economy, spending, to make something else instead of making weapons. How to make it a concrete effort is a very big subject for me. Our mind is very powerful this way. When we lose a teacher, it is very shocking. It has a very powerful effect. When a student dies or goes away, it takes a long time to approve yourself. Trust and dependence is so tightly interrelated that it is very difficult to fill the empty gap. In 20 years of life, I fear we've lost many fellow practitioners, unreturned friends. Even just thinking of it, you re-experience your anxiety again and again, as well as the great joy you shared together.
A temple is where your ashes are brought. You end there when you pass away. Your personal, individual life ends, and you ask someone to bring them somewhere. That somewhere is the temple. So it has been from long ago that this place, Jikoji, was a burial place before the first people from Europe came. I say this place, meaning this long strip of land. Long Ridge, you call it. For the benefit of living things, here we could plan many things. And a student asks, do you think it's your baby? I don't know. You think so? I never thought so. I know the other day people asked me about Canon Doe. What are you going to do with your baby? And the date of when this place could legally operate as a temple is the same day as Canon Doe. And somebody tricked me. It was my birthday present. It was my birthday. Oh no, I'm trapped. Student. So this wasn't your idea? It happened, and of course, I cannot do it alone. People who want to visit this place, do things here, should gather regularly. Continuing this place is secondary. Who comes here is most important to me. If I am here, I must limit people, or I might make some kind of trip on others. If you put me in the teacher's position, I am responsible as a last resort to stop this place and to ask people to leave. But so far, I have never asked people to leave. But that is a negative kind of responsibility in an emergency case. So I want to know more about what you want to do on this land. Most residents here are Caucasian. I'm kind of alien, so I mustn't be your boss. That's my feeling. It's a kind of cultural problem, and I want to be very smart about this.
You can have it if you want. How's that time?
Yeah, getting there.
Okay. Any discussion or comments on Colvin? Anything anybody want to share or say about him?
I could add one thing. I think it was also in that book. I heard from, well, first of all, Colvin died in a drowning accident. Mm-hmm. And his middle child, Maya, had drowned, and then he was ill at the time and also had a heart condition. So there's speculation that he perhaps had a heart attack or something in the process. But anyway, they both died in this pond in Switzerland. And when I first started to practice, I was in his home temple in Kamo, in the Gata prefecture. And I heard this story that from his brother, from the brother that was mentioned, Kaven, his older brother, when Colvin was a very young boy, he was out in the back of the temple, and there's a series of ponds there that are connected by bridges. You remember that? You've been there many times. I think he was like 3 or something like that, or 4. And there's koi. There's Japanese carp that swim in there, and the carp was. He was on the bridge. He was standing on the bridge where the pond comes, narrows, and then goes into another pond. And he was watching, maybe kneeling. He was watching the carp go by, swim, and the carp swam underneath the bridge. And he followed the carp as a young boy. And he leaned over so far that he fell in the pond, and he almost drowned. But luckily, a gardener that was working at the time heard the splash and came and pulled him out. And the ponds they're pretty shallow. They're just like about like that. But apparently, he went in like head first. He was following that fish. He went in head first and he kind of stuck in the mud. So his feet were out in the air, you know. So the gardener just pulled him right out like a fish. Anyway, I was thinking that that was really Colvin's way. He dove in, didn't he? Like he dove into our lives and our culture and our problems, I guess you could say. Came to America in 68, was from a monastery to San Francisco, right? Initially to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It was the height of Haight-Ashbury, and it was like a really crazy time, and he very kindly just dove in like a kid. He just watched the fish and he dove into our lives, and he ended his life that way. He just dove in. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Suzuki needed a Tassajara. He needed something special. Hachi and Colvin had this technique or manner of approach to Zen or something. I'm not sure what that was. Do you recall that? No.
Colvin set up. Suzuki Roshi asked Colvin to set up monastic practice in America. So since he was the jisha for the abbot there, and he knew all the forms at Tassajara, at Tehachi, that and also he knew English very well. But what wasn't mentioned in the biography was that his master Chino, and Colvin was the adopted son, and to be the heir of Chino. Mm-hmm. He was also Colvin's English teacher in high school. Yes. And Colvin was like his best student. Colvin was actually well known for being really, really intelligent, not just in Buddhist studies, but also in language. Mm-hmm. He was one of the few people that actually knew English. I mean, we might argue with that because, you know, his English was his own.
Not Yankee.
Very unique, right?
Yeah. He created his own version of it.
Yeah.
So he knew the forms that Suzuki maybe was a little not so polished with
I don't know about Suzuki Roshi's knowledge of the forms, but Colvin definitely knew the forms, and Suzuki Roshi asked him to set up Tassajara as a monastery and to be for practice periods, you know, the way it's set up now. So he was one of the he sort of founded that form of Tassajara. Yeah.
Was that our bell?
Yeah.